Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Om Shri Sai Ram, loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. The voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. And Mother's Day greetings to our global listeners. Sai Ram and welcome to Thursday Live. You're tuned to our Asia stream coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. The time in the ashram right now is 40 minutes past 9 a.m. Indian Standard Time. Today is the 8th of May 2014. Excuse me. My name is Karuna and I will be hosting this segment called Morning Glory. Thank you for staying with us on this yet another very bright and beautiful and really pleasant Thursday morning here in the ashram. I'm pleased to inform you that the countdown has begun to the big day when thousands of Buddhist devotees from all over the world will descend upon the divine valley of Prashanthi Nilayam to pay their homage to Lord Buddha on the occasion of Buddha Purnima, which incidentally falls on Wednesday, May the 14th this year. Meanwhile, Prashanthi Nilayam continues to be busy can be. Mother Ishwaramba Day celebrations just got over on Tuesday, May 6th. And right now, you can see lots of families with young children in the ashram. Thousands of families whose school-going children are on summer vacation currently are visiting the ashram to receive Baba's blessings. It's so nice to see bright young children from all over India lining up for the Mahasamadhi Darshan. And thankfully, our weather has improved quite a lot and very suddenly and dramatically. Current temperature in the Divine Valley is a very tolerable 28 degrees Celsius. We follow Celsius, that is metric in India. We are expecting highs of 34 Celsius in the afternoon, overnight lows in the mid to late 20s for the next few days, and with the gentle breeze, it feels quite pleasant after sunset and early mornings. Actually, it's quite a blessing that in the coming weeks, our highest temperature will only be in the mid-30s. And further good news is that some rainfall is expected over the next few days, which should be refreshing and very welcome, of course. And now, here's what's making news in Puttaparthi this morning. Yesterday, this part of Andhra Pradesh went to polls to elect their representatives to two levels of government. They voted to elect their representatives in the Indian Parliament or Lok Sabha as part of the national elections that are currently on in India, an election which is proving to be the world's biggest democratic exercise. And Puttaparthi is home to many very self-aware citizens who take their duty to their country very seriously. So just about every eligible voter here reported to the nearby polling stations yesterday to cast their ballot. The one that most of our ashramites went to was set up in the nearby Ishwaramba school. Other polling stations were in Puttaparthi town and nearby areas. And Puttaparthi also voted for another level of government, that is our state level representatives or MLAs as they are called, members of the Legislative Assembly for our state of Andhra Pradesh. As you may be aware, on June 1st, our part of Andhra Pradesh will be part of the newly carved state of Simandhra. And our elected representatives will be members of the Simandhra State's Legislative Assembly. So a lot of political destinies were sealed by the voters here all of yesterday. So as you can tell, right after Ishwaramba Day, we had some hectic civic duties to perform here. And as expected, all of Baba's devotees are awake to their commitment towards good citizenship, which is a sub-value of right conduct or dharma that Baba so emphatically taught us. Therefore, let no one assume that we only sing bhajans and pray and serve the needy through our seva activities here in Prashanti Nilayam. We also participate in nation building, and we do it honestly, peacefully, and really responsibly. Along with the rest of the world, we'll be awaiting the outcome of this historic election on May 16th. Meanwhile, Prashanti Nilayam, as you all know, never stops celebrating. I will share with you some highlights of the recent Ishwaramba Day and its significance further along in the show. And next week, devotees from Taiwan to Thailand, Cambodia to Japan, from Dharamsala to Kusalnagar, a large contingent of Buddhist devotees will be here to mark Buddha Purnima. In Prashanti Nilayam, life is so divinely beautiful all the time. The one thing that is truly unique about Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba is his timeless and universal teachings, along with the manner in which he led his own life. Because that's what attracted seekers of truth from all religions of the world to Prashanti Nilayam. Yet, Baba did not seek to start a new religion, nor did he wish to direct followers to any particular religion. Rather, he urged us to continue to follow the religion of our choice and or upbringing. He left it entirely to us. Baba says, and I quote him, "I have come to light the lamp of love in your hearts, to see that it shines day by day with added luster. I have come to tell you of this universal, unitary faith, this spiritual principle, this path of love, this duty of love, this obligation to love. Every religion teaches man to fill his being with the glory of God and to evict the pettiness of conceit. It trains him in the methods of unattachment and discernment so that he may aim high and attain spiritual liberation. Believe that all hearts are motivated by the one and only God, that all faiths glorify the one and only God, that all names in all languages and all forms man can conceive denote the one and only God. His adoration is best done by means of love. Cultivate that attitude of oneness between men of all creeds and all countries. That is the message of love I bring. That is the message I wish you to take to heart." Satya Sai Baba further says, "Let the different faiths exist. Let them flourish. And let the glory of God be sung in all the languages and in a variety of tunes. That should be the ideal. Respect the differences between the faiths and recognize them as valid, as long as they do not extinguish the flame of unity." Unquote. On that note of true inclusion and acceptance, let's take off Morning Glory with our ongoing Tryst with Divinity interview with the internationally acclaimed but most humble diabetologist from Chennai, Dr. V. Mohan. This will be followed by the concluding part of the Fleeting Moments interview with Anandpur College alumna, Mrs. Lata Ramesh. The thing is, those who follow Baba's teachings tend to be so down to earth and humble that sometimes we miss the big picture when we work besides them. Dr. V. Mohan is a person whose professional achievements and stature are not easy to describe. Yet, as a member of our Sai family, Dr. Mohan remains a quiet and humble person. There's so much to learn from him. Let's listen in to part two of his highly inspiring four-part Tryst with Divinity interview with my colleague, Brother Bishop Pushti.
Sometimes the rest of doctors are stumped. They just don't know what to do. There was a Muslim gentleman who came, and he had undergone a surgery, a small anal surgery he had undergone, and he had a very low pain threshold. He cannot stand any pain, the least of pain, and this is a very painful area. So he had been undergone a surgery there, and the first night after that operation, he didn't sleep at all. He had intense pain. So finally we had given Fortwin and then Pethidine, These are the narcotic drugs which you normally give as a last resort. I give them that also.
Painkillers.
Painkillers. Narcotic painkillers they're called. Okay. If you give them for long enough, you get addicted to that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave it to him. I said, you know, he needs a pain. He's shouting with pain. We gave him that. He didn't sleep. The whole night with that also, he didn't sleep. So next evening I had gone somewhere, then I knew this man is now in trouble. So I went back to do rounds. Around 8:30 in the night, I went back to do rounds. And the moment I went to his room, he caught my hand. And he said, "Doctor, doctor, doctor, do something, do something, do something. I'm having pain, I'm having pain. Do something." So I said, "Look, I have given you, you know, yesterday the strongest of medicines I've given you. There's nothing stronger than that I can think of, you know, for pain. So I'll probably repeat it today." "No, no, no, no. You must do something for me, you know, relieve the pain, relieve the pain. I don't care what you do. I cannot go through one more night of pain. I'm suffering, doctor. I'm suffering. Pain, 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 pain." So my heart melted. I didn't know what to do. I told him, "Close your eyes." And he closed his eyes. And he was sitting on the bed. So I have this ring, Swami's ring. So I just prayed to Swami and put the ring on his head and said, you know, I just silent prayer to Swami. I said, "Swami, I don't know what to do, you know. This fellow, I've given him everything and I'm just not able to, you know, control his pain. You are all merciful, you are all loving, and this man needs his help. So I'm praying to you to relieve him of his pain. Irrespective of what medicine I give, I don't think that's going to have the thing. It is you who is going to, you know, relieve his pain. I pray to you for this pain and I surrender at your lotus feet because I can't. That's it. As a doctor, I'm stumped. Now I surrender to you. You know, at the end of my thing, I have to come to you only. So you look after about 1 minute, 2 minutes. Then I told him, "Okay, now you open your eyes. Okay, you'll be fine." I said, before he asked me a question, I walked out of the room. Okay. As I was walking in, sister came. The nurse came. He said, "Today what I'll give him? Repeat the same. What else is there? I don't know of anything. Give morphine instead of pethidine. It makes not much of a difference." So I said, "You give this combination, I think we'll give." I said, "What time I'll give?" "Around 9:30 you go in the night, so it will sleep for some time. I hope this time he sleeps. So you know, give him that." I said, and I walked out. Sister went at 9:30 to his room. The man is fast asleep. Okay. Nothing has been given to him. Not even a crocin was given to him. He is knocked out. And he's sleeping, snoring, sound sleep. So she called me and she said, "He's sleeping soundly now. What shall I do?" I said, "Don't give it, because you go and poke him now, he'll wake up, you know. Maybe in the night he'll get up. That time you give it him. Okay, so at least some hours he slept. Then you give him this poke, then few more hours, then tonight at least we have gone through, you know." She kept going back every 2 hours. Fellow is fast asleep. Okay. And then 7:30 in the morning he gets up. And he says, "No pain, nothing. All gone. I'm fine, you know." Then he called the sister and said, "What did you give me yesterday?" Because he said, "Previous day you gave pethidine, fortuin, something. So yesterday what did you give?" Then she said, "I didn't give you anything, you know." Then he said, "What do you mean I never gave me anything?" "Sir, you slept up, sir. So I didn't." Then the doctor said not to give you injection. "How did I sleep?" I said, "I don't know, sir. You slept off and so this thing." I said, "No, I'll wait for Dr. Mohan to come." Then I entered his room for rounds. He caught my hand again. "Doctor, what did you do to me?" I said, "What did I do to you?" Then he said, "No, my pain is gone." I said, "No, be happy. If your pain is gone, be happy, you know." He said, "No, you did something. You made me close my eyes. And then you did something. Something on my head you put. Then after that you went off. And then I just slept off. What did you do? I just want to know what you did." I said, "What does it matter what I did? Okay. You have got relief and that's what you wanted. You have got it. There ends the story. Finished. Let's not go further." Well, I didn't want to talk to a Muslim gentleman about Swami and this. And I'm a little delicate to how to explain it to him, you know. They don't accept somebody in human form as a God, you know. So only the formless God, only Allah. So I was a little embarrassed to tell him that. And in retrospect, I should not have been embarrassed. I should have told him straight away. But Swami taught me that. The next minute he taught me that. He said, "I insist that I know what you did to me." And I said, "Okay, if you really want to know, you know, this ring of Swami is there. I put it on your head and I prayed to Swami to relieve your pain. And that's it. I didn't do anything else. That's all I did." Next sentence he tells me, "Your Baba is God, doctor. Only God can do that. No human being can do that. You have prayed to him and he has relieved it. That means your Baba is God. And he said, you're so lucky, doctor, you're able to see a human God, God in human form, and you're able to go to Puttaparthi. Next time you go there, please pray for me. So, it so happened that after some time when I came here, actually I could relate this in one of the speeches which Swami made me give. I mentioned, I took Swami's permission. Can I talk about it? He said, yes. So I talked about it. Then I'd taken his permission also. Anytime I get, can I talk about it? Oh, please, please tell, please tell. So I told him that in front of Swami, I spoke about it. He said, I'm so blessed that Swami actually heard about me, you know, about it. I wish I could come to Puttaparthi and be there. Then he said, you know, in my circles, if I come, he's a very well-known man. I'll be noted immediately, so I pray, but I don't want to come there right now, not yet ready to come there. But you know, you are blessed, you are able to go. Please pray for me every time you go there, and all that he says. So here is an example of where Swami's grace saves somebody, okay, from pain and from anything. I know cancers which have been cured, a lady who had cancer, completely cured by Swami, the cancer, just canceled the cancer. This pain thing, my mother went through a similar thing. She had undergone a surgery, a hip replacement surgery. She was very bad asthmatic. She's still there, quite old, but she has, I mean, from young age, she had asthma. And because this asthma, giving her anesthesia is a bit of a problem. So they had to give her an epidural. At the back, they put in like spinal. They put in a tube, and then continuously the pain, because very severe pain. Hip surgery, she even underwent a hip replacement, which means you cut the hip, take out the bone and put in a steel one. So you can't, such a big bone, if you cut, you can imagine how the pain will be, you know. And you're replacing it with a steel one. That's what is called a hip replacement, you know. So she had undergone a hip replacement that night, and I was staying with her in the hospital, and she was fine until around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, around 3 o'clock, I think, in the morning. Suddenly she started shouting, you know, saying that, oh, Mohan, it's paining, 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 paining. She started crying. Then we called the doctor and had a look. That tube has slipped out. The one which is put inside, that has slipped out. Now, there's no way you can put it back because that needs an anesthetist, number one. Number two, before surgery, you could bend her. And no, she's already undergone surgery and one hip has been replaced. How can you bend her again and put it back? It's not possible, you know. So, I don't know what to do. It's completely stuck. I don't know what to do. She's crying in pain. There, at that hospital, I knelt down to Swami and I said, Swami, I'm stuck, you know, just don't know what to do. She's in pain, Swami. This is the time when, you know, you have to come. Only divine intervention can help at this stage. So I'm praying to you, Swami, she needs help. So please help her now, Swami, and relieve her of the pain. You know, I cannot hear this, shouting in pain, you know, how can I sit by her? And I don't know what to do now. One injection and all is not going to, how long? After the 4 hours, again is going to come. Hip replacement, you know. So I just took Vibhuti, I had Vibhuti there, put Vibhuti in her mouth, and put Vibhuti on her forehead, and just said, Mommy, you will be fine. In 2-3 minutes time, she just slept off. Nothing was given. Lady was shouting in pain. 2-3 minutes later, she's just finished. Swami's grace has come. No medicines, nothing. For pain, you know. See, I'm not only a doctor, I'm also a scientist. So, sometimes when I say this, of course, devotees, when they hear that, they'll say, yes. But sometimes when I say this, you know, the medical profession, they'll say, Dr. Mohan, have you gone out of your head? How is it possible, you know? How is it possible? You are saying that just you put a little vibhuti in her mouth, and then the pain went away. I said, you are saying it's not possible, because you're thinking from the human level. You're forgetting for a moment that there is something above us. There is something called divine, and that God is omnipotent. He is omnipresent, so he can hear that moment. He is omniscient, he knows everything, and he is omnipotent. There is nothing he cannot do. If he can create a whole universe, a whole galaxy, a whole universe, somebody's pain he cannot relieve, you know. So you are underestimating God, you know. You are not giving enough credit to God. You are not believing in God. That is what is. We are only praying to him. Not that we are only praying to him. We always pray to him. But in special situations like this, we are desperate. And we are completely surrendering to him. At that Charanagada, we are just going and saying, now there is nothing more but you, we are saying. You think the Lord will not listen to you at that time? Okay? Tennyson says, Alfred Lord Tennyson says, more things are wrought by prayer than this world ever dreams of. Mahatma Gandhi has said, that I have never known an instance in my life when God has not answered my prayers. Every single time it will come, okay? Then people will say, oh, you're saying all this. That means there are so many instances where prayers have not been answered. So what do you say for that? Atheists say that. So many people have prayed for something. If it has not happened, it's for a good reason it has not happened. It is not meant to happen. If it has happened, it's worse for you. And that is why it has not happened. Okay? If you have full faith in it, and you surrender, and then if you pray with all your heart, Swami says, my heart is like butter, but still needs some warmth to melt that butter. So that is that warmth that you are talking about. That is an intense faith that you are talking about. That is that warmth that you must build up when you really pray to Him. If you do that, you have to really call Him from the bottom of your heart. If you do that, I have not seen a single instance when Swami has not responded. Swami will always, always, always respond. And as a medical doctor, or as a scientist, or as anything, it is that surrendering which is the most important point. Sometimes I think He brings His tests to test you. Will you think of me, you know? And when will you think of me? Again, going back to Mahabharata, Draupadi, you know, He comes, but He comes a little late, you know, because she is calling to Krishna who is far away. Yes. He says, I am in your heart. If you had only called Krishna here, from the heart come, I would have come running to you. You prayed to the other Krishna who is far away, so I had to come all the way. Yes. So it took me some time to come, you know. So these are all instances which teach you that omnipresent, He is always there, but He is also waiting for you to call Him. You call, you take the first step, I'll take 100 steps. He never said, you don't take any step, I'll take all the steps towards you.
Yes.
He has also put a condition, you take the first step. That first step you take, I'll take 100 steps towards you. I think that is what you have to keep in mind. And it's very humbling, because we may think we're big doctors, big lawyers, big this thing, but we know how small we are when such things happen. And I think these are all humbling experiences, because they teach you that ultimately there is something beyond us. And ultimately somebody else is curing. So when somebody gets better, we say, ah, we cured him and so on. Next instance, we'll know that we were wrong. One of my ENT surgeons, who is my classmate, used to say that he'll have two patients. One will be a young person who, in a very early stage of disease, it has been detected, cancers, two cancers. Very early stage of, and he'll remove the entire tumor, okay? And he'll say that you are completely cured. Next 20 years, no problem for you, okay? The other will be an older person who has a little more advanced disease, so he could not even do the full treatment for the person. So he'll tell them very guarded prognosis, you know, maximum 6 months, 1 year. 10 years later, that fellow will be still alive. This fellow, some recurrence would have come within 6 months, and he would have died within 6 months to 1 year. So he says, as a medical doctor, with all the knowledge that we have, of course we're able to, I'm not saying you cannot prognosticate. I'm not saying there's no medical science, you can't say this will do well, that will do well. In general, you can get it done. Statistics. If you take 80%, this will happen, 20%, that will happen. All that is true. If you do science properly, you'll be able to show. But in a given individual, can you say that? You will be alright. You will not be alright. Can we say that? No. We cannot say that. Because that God decides. That person's fate is decided by God. In general, you can say, you do this treatment, 80% do well. You do this treatment, 60% will do well. What about 40%? What about 20%? There's always something there. So every time we submit and we say, well, I have done what I have to do. Now you pray. And it's your karma, what you have to get from God, that part. But I have done my job. We have done what we can do. Okay? Now you pray to the Almighty. And He will do the best for you.
Surgeon only cuts, God heals.
God heals. Absolutely right.
But when did this belief in that higher power, or this tremendous faith in something which is definitely beyond all science and beyond all medicine, firm up in you?
In me. I'm trying to write a book on Swami, and I hope this book will see the light of day. It's a long gestation. I wrote something, kept it away. Then now, if very actively, Swami has given me some signs that I better get on with it. So I started doing it, and this has this answer in it and the chapter in it. I'll give you one example of that. I'm giving you a preview of the one of the chapters in the book. So here, and this is not directly related to Swami. I was not a Swami's devotee until 1992 in that sense. Although He has later shown me that all the gods you prayed to are I used to pray to God, but He later showed that any god you prayed to is me. And that later on it came. But it was only in 92 actually when I took my official first step to Swami and then became His devotee and then started praying to Him. And now literally I don't pray to any other god, because I feel all gods are the same. All Swami is all gods. So if I pray to Him, I'm praying to all gods. I'm against no god. I'm not against any god, because all gods are the same. But for me, Swami is enough. I don't need any other god. You know, so I literally don't even go to temples now. Because when I go there, I'll say pray to Swami only. I feel coming to Puttaparthi, To see the living God in His presence is actually better. So without any people say, oh, you stop going to Shabarimala, you stop going there, you stop going there. It's not necessary. Because ultimately I am seeing God here. And same, if I go to Ayyappa also, he is also Baba only.
Yes.
So to me it makes no difference. So those who go into Ayyappa, fine, let them continue to go. They are seeing God in that form. I am seeing God in this form. Each one has his own chosen deity. For me, my chosen deity is Bhagwan Sri Satyasai Baba. I don't have any other God. I can openly say that. Okay? Because all gods are the same. If I pray to Jesus also, I am praying to Him only. And Jesus is also God. So it doesn't matter at all. You choose one. If you have two paths to come to Puttaparthi, one along this way and one along the other way, some prefer that for some particular reason. The scenery is good, the road is smaller, but it's more rustic, it looks nice through the village. No, I want to go through the highway, I want to come fast, this, that. Some prefer that. Some people say, what boring highway, this is very much better. Different. Ultimately, you come to Puttaparthi. Yes. It doesn't matter which way you come. So similarly, roads to God also are different. But let me go back to your question. So there was this boy in school who was my junior. And he was a little poor. He was a Sai devotee. So there is a link in that way. I wasn't at that time, but he was. And he was one of the few Sai devotees that I knew of at that time. This is 1960s probably. Yeah. 1960s. So this boy, he came in Chennai. He was my, I was studying in school in St. Mary's High School, and this boy was 1 year junior to me. And since he could not afford, every year when I pass out, he'll come and ask for some books to me, my books, so that he can save on the textbooks. Are very expensive those days. Some of them were very expensive. I remember this March of Times, a very expensive book. Even those days, it was few hundred rupees, you know. So, it's a beautiful book called March of Times. So, I had this book, and so he came and asked me, can you give me the March of Times? And already, he's a slow thing. He said, 2 months, 3 months after that, he'll think of the book itself. So, already we are into February, March, and I've already finished 2-3 months in my next class. I've forgotten where my old books are, nothing. But he asked me in school, will you give me the March of Times? And I said, yeah, I'll give you, come home, come at 4:30 at home after class, after school, you come, I'll give you. I said, I had no idea where this book was, okay. Promptly at 4:30, he landed up. Suddenly, I panicked because I didn't know where the book was. I have many faults in life, but one of the things I don't have is once I make a promise, I normally don't break it. And from childhood, it's been like that. I never like to break a promise given to anyone, for that matter. And I promised him I'll give it, you know. And he has landed up there at 4:30. He's rung the bell. My servant came and told me he has come. I panicked because I didn't know where this book was. I had absolutely no idea where this book was, okay? So what I did was, I just knelt down and prayed to God in general. Not to Baba at that time, there was not a Baba devotee, but just to God. And I said, okay, God, okay, I don't know where this book is. I made a promise to Him. I don't want to break my promise. I don't know where the book is, but You know where the book is. You get me that book now, okay? Until You get that book, I'm going to remain like this now. You show me where the book is. And then I will go and give this book to Him. If You do that, I will believe that there is a God. There is a superpower. Okay? If not, then there is no God. Because You can't do this for me, then what can You do? You know? So You prove to me now. Because I am in a thing now where I want to know whether it is God or no God and so on. So now I am going to wait here now till You give me the answer. Okay? Direct test to God.
How old were you then?
I was in the 7th standard, so I must have been, what, 11, something like that?
Yeah.
So I was still kneeling, then I closed my eyes. I don't know how many minutes, I lost count of time, you know. So I was kind of meditating like that, sitting like that and saying, yeah, book, 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 now tell me, where's the book, Suddenly, I saw the book in the most unusual, unexpected place. There is outside my house, this is in Royapuram, in an old house, there was an electric meter room, you know. It's a small room about, say, 6 feet by 2 feet or 3 feet, you know. It's a small room where the only activity there is once a month from the electricity department, they'll come and they'll read the electricity meter. That was there, the meter was on the wall. And the only other thing which used to hit, those days we had used charcoal for fire, we didn't have gas. So charcoal. So sack of charcoal, when the once a month the charcoal, big charcoal sack will come. So my gardener, nobody goes inside that room. Only my gardener goes inside that room, okay? So sack of charcoal comes and he'll open it and put it there. And the electricity man comes, he'll take. There are only 2 times that is opened, okay? But here I am seeing it in my mind. The charcoal is there, sack, and on that March of Times is sitting.
It's sort of a mental vision.
Yeah, I'm seeing it. I'm actually seeing it. I can see the charcoal and I can see the March of Time sitting on it. Okay. Now that's not a place you keep books at all. But I've seen it. I've already seen it. I've asked, either he has shown it to me there, but I think he has teleported it. Because it could not have come there, and I'll tell you why he has teleported it. So I walk out, so I'm so confident that it is there. So I walk out, this boy is there, and he says, come, we'll go, I'll get you the book, you know. Then I called the gardener and said, get me the room key. So he asked me, why do you want that room key? I said, no, there's some book in it. No, sir, there's no book and all in it, sir. No, I said, bring, it is there, let's go. He said, this is not book, sir, I keep everything, there's nothing there, sir, only this meter. No, you bring the key, I said. So he went there, and I'm calling the boy, come, I'll give it to you. No, so confident, I'm, because I've seen it, no, there, my vision, he has shown it. So I said, okay, come. Open the door. On the sack of charcoal, March of Times is sitting.
Wow.
Only one book. Only March of Times. Nothing else. Okay. I take the March of Times. There's no charcoal on it. Nothing is there. It has been placed there at that time. Why charcoal room? Why this? Maybe to make it so extraordinary that the story will... If I found it in some, you know, where you keep books or something in my place, then probably... It's not so extraordinary. Maybe to reinforce the faith, he took it. So I took it from him, gave it to him and said, okay, thank you, happy. Oh, thank you so much, he said, and he went off. Till today, I've not told him about this miracle. I still know him. He's still Sai devotee, the thing, he's still my friend, he's thing. Till today, I've not told him the story, you know. But that convinced me, at that age, that there is something beyond us. And when we need to reach out, you know, somebody said, I think it was Francis Bacon or somebody who said, that if everything was available to you and given to you, what are the heavens for? You know, the heavens are there for you to stretch out. If already everything is given to you, there is no need for heavens, you know. But the heavens are there for you when you need something, okay, you reach out and it shall be given to you. And that was the first example. I started other experiments, you know. Can you do something superhuman if you use the power of God? You know, so for example, I was a shot put champion. Okay, so every day I would practice shot put, and I knew my distance because every day I was practicing for the event. I later became the athletic captain of my college MMC team and intermedical champion and so on. So I know my distance, and every day evening I used to practice this. So I know so many meters, so many 0.2, 0.3. I have a thing. I used to measure it. So one of those thing in college. This is in college now. Intermedical competition, there was a guy from Tanjore who was actually throwing more than me. So he was little ahead of me. Okay. And I have never thrown that in my life. The distance which he has covered, I don't know how much it was, 9.8 meters, something like that. He had thrown that, and I was clearly about half a meter or 1 meter less than him. I'm already doing my best, because I do it every day, so I do my best. They give you 6 throws, you know. So 5 throws are over. His throw is already over. So he's still half a meter ahead of me. So I take this shot put in my hand, and I just turned around, you know, and then I'm telling God, okay, I'm going to try this now. Okay. I'm not going to throw. You're going to throw this. Okay. And one test more I just need for my final thing that, you know, your power is much more than what these mortals can do. Can you help me with this? To achieve something, not to win that, but to show that I can do something much more if I use your power, you know. So can you help me to do that? So I said, okay, now I'm going to do it, I said. So I just prayed to him and gave an answer. He said, now I'm going to do it. Now I'm going to test. Let's see what happens. So I go and throw. It goes about a meter and a half more than what that guy has thrown. Oh my God. I'm looking at myself and saying, did I throw that? You know? It's like this Blackbeard's Ghost movie and all, no? Where he'll come and walk with it. See that movie where he carries it and goes? It's something like that. And I said, my God. Hereafter, I'm not going to test you. No need for any more tests, you know? But I'll come to you. Whenever I need some help of some kind, not to win a thing like this, but whenever I need help, to help people, at least I can use it, you know. So from that, you know, there's no more question of God or this thing. And so if now I feel, you know, when people question, is there a God, is there a thing, do such experiments, please, you know, and convince yourself. Swami also says, test me as many times. But after you have been convinced, then don't try to question me or try to understand me, because it's beyond your capacity. You're an ordinary mortal. Can you understand me? Can you understand my universe? Can you understand what I created? Can you understand why I'm doing certain things? It's beyond you. Don't even waste your time. Okay? First you do all your experiments to develop the faith. Once you develop the faith, surrender. After that, so that's exactly what I've done in my life. The first few years went in all this. After that I realized, oh my God, there's something there which we can use for helping people and so on. So initially we pray only for, you know, help me pass the exam, help me get this, that's all. But eventually we start praying for other people, helping people and the profession, you know, make this man okay, make the thing. Then you start
seeing the help of God so much in this profession.
In everything, every time, you know, I've seen surgeons, experienced surgeons, every time, I've seen a Christian gentleman, every time before he puts his first thing, he'll make the sign of the cross, then only he'll put his first incision. At that crucial moment, you need God, you know. Because otherwise that one little thing you make can go, it can damage the liver, damage something, because you think you're doing it. And then, with all your skills, you may make a mistake. So you're still praying to God, protect me, take me along, this person has come to me for my help, please be with me as I serve this person. Then you'll see the difference. But many people become arrogant, you know, it's me, I'm the greatest, I'm this, I'm that, and think your downfall will come. Because ultimately your downfall will come because arrogance. You know, it happened to Ravana, it happened to Karna, it happened to whoever, you know, had thought that they were the greatest, ultimately history has proved that they were not. You know, they might have been very, very great, but without that grace of God, that ultimate thing, it doesn't happen. So that is where I think Swami has been teaching us all along, you know. Of course, his principles are so simple. That's what attracted me. Love all, serve all, help ever, hurt never. Even if you can't oblige, speak obligingly.
Yes.
You know, these are all things which are so simple to apply in daily life. I see somebody will come to me for a favor which I cannot do. Okay, I simply cannot do it. Be nice to him and say, I would have loved to do this for you, you know, and I wish I could have done it, but it's not in my hands to do that, you know. And so, I wish you all the very best. I'll even pray for you for it. But in this particular thing, please excuse me, I'm not able to do it, you know. If you say that, that man will never be angry with you. He still knows you've not done it for him, you know. But it's for a reason you're not able to do, you know. So, speak obligingly. So these things I think what Swami has taught us, which we will never forget. Throughout our life, his teachings are always there.
Wow, amazing. I mean, people know about your experiments in the field of medicine, but I think not many know about your experiments with God. And that is actually the basis, how it turns out, for all the success that you have achieved in your life. How was it when you received Padma Shri from the President's hands?
In one of my trips to Puttaparthi, 2-3 years before I got the Padma Shri, Swami had actually hinted, not directly as in telling me you will get Padma Shri, but through an indirect episode. I can't actually explain it properly, but he had kind of told me that...
You knew it was coming.
I knew it was coming, because he had given me the sign, you know, saying that, in fact, it mentioned Padma Shri. That is
what he meant. Swami had mentioned.
Padma Shri he had mentioned.
Wow.
So I knew it's coming. Then I was nominated once some few years ago, that year. I thought, no, he's given me the sign. And so when somebody said, shall I nominate, I got myself nominated. So I didn't get it that year. So I said, okay, maybe, you know, I misunderstood the sign, it may not be. The next year, Swami said something about, why are you going after material things or something like that. So then when somebody said they'll nominate me, I said, don't nominate me. You know, I don't want. I refused to get nominated. So that is the second year. The first year I was nominated, I never got. Second year, I never went for the nomination. Third year, I was not nominated. Without being nominated, that is, I didn't send in, I never knew. Somebody told me that I'm getting Padma Shri. Okay. They said, you have been shortlisted. Your name. I said, how can it be? When I'm not sent in an official nomination, how can... No, somebody from Delhi has nominated. Anybody in the country can nominate. You don't need to know. You don't have to sign. You don't have to do anything. Anybody can nominate. Somebody in Delhi has nominated. I didn't believe it until they came for the inspection. You know, when the final stage comes, they'll come for inspection. So they came for the inspection. And then it's already shortlisted. The president's physician told me congratulations, and he announced it in front of, this is the year before I got it, incidentally, not the year I got it, okay. The president's physician in a meeting 2 days before, it's announced in Republic Day as you know, 2 days before there is a meeting in Chennai, and he announced it to everyone, Dr. Mohan is getting Padma Shri, and everybody clapped and cheered and so on. Morning when the papers came, my name is not there. It was the most embarrassing thing in my life. And I not even applied, you know. I never applied. I was not nominated. I didn't know I was nominated. I didn't know anything. But they came for the inspection. The final inspection, the income tax will come, this will come, police will come, verification. Everything happened. But in the last minute, some political thing takes place and my name was removed, okay. My wife was very ill at the time. And so she knew this in January, the year of Swami Samadhi also, and my wife actually passed away 30 days before that, on March 25th. So she knew she won't be there for the next year, you know. So she told me, "You're disappointed." I said, "I'm not, because I didn't apply. So how can I be disappointed when I'm not? I'm only a little bit ashamed because this fellow announced in front of everyone. He could have kept quiet. He announced it and then, you know, I didn't get it. So people will think, you know, what's happening, you know. So I wish he had not said anything and I could have, I never applied, I never asked for it, never asked anything." Then she said, "You will get it next year. Okay? I won't be here, but I will let you know that I know that you got it. And next year you're getting it," she said. Next year I was nominated. The year I got it, I was actually nominated, because people said, "You come so close, you've been shortlisted, now why are you not allowing yourself to be nominated?" So two, three, because the same guys who had knew that, you know, this had happened and so on, this guy also who had announced it, he was also feeling very bad. So I got multiple nominations from my society, from this, from my association. Everyone nominated me the next year. Okay. Then my wife passed away, Mahasamadhi also occurred that year, 2011. So 2011, 2012 nominations took place and I was nominated and so on. And this time, many people told me I'm getting it, because from Delhi itself, they said, "You're getting it, you're getting it." I said, "I don't know, it's happened so many times and, you know, I'm not interested, so I don't," they say, "No, no, no, you're getting it, you're getting it." Then they again came for inspection, they came for everything, this step. And the guy who came for inspection said, "Sir, your name is first in the list, so you will definitely get this year," he told me. So that morning, on January 25th, 12 o'clock, they'll call from the home office and say the president is has selected your name. That morning I went into my office, I keep a garland for Swami, you know, every morning for Swami and for my wife, two fresh garlands, I personally put it, I'll say I have to put it every day. I went and sat there around 9 o'clock in the morning, Swami's garland started shaking, and it fell, the whole garland fell, okay. So I went back and put it. Then my wife's garland started shaking, it never happened so many days before. And after that also, last 2 years also, it has not, 1.5 years also, it has not happened. Okay? Her garland started shaking. She said, "I'll let you know. When you get it, I won't be there, but I'll let you know," she said. "I will be there and I'll let you know that you got it." So then it started shaking. That fell. Then I went and put that back. Then Swami started shaking and fell. I put it back. Then her started shaking and it fell. Four times that fell, four times this fell in a matter of 2 hours. Okay, never before, never after it has happened, only on that day. The last time after one of these fell, I think the Swami's last which fell, and even the secretary is asking, "Why, sir, it is shaking like this thing, that is shaking, this is shaking. It's shaking like this, you know." And the thing, I said, I don't know, but how can I tell her, you know, maybe because I'm getting this thing. So I said, I was telling myself, 12 o'clock I'll know when I'm getting. 12 o'clock call came, saying that the president has selected you for Padma Shri. Will you accept? Because that time also you can refuse. If you say, you know, many people refuse, saying that, "No, I should have got bigger one, not this one." You know how this controversy goes on. So I said, "I'm humbled to accept, I will think." But both Swami and my wife were letting me know that they know, you know. So, and he had already given me a signal years ago, but then in his time only it will come. You know, when I really applied for it and all, I never got it. But then in his time, it will come. But he had given me an indication. So I know it is Swami's grace only that has also come. Of course, it's very nice because the function is extremely well organized. And you meet the president, you meet the prime minister. Almost the entire cabinet is there. The vice president was there. Sonia Gandhi was there. I mean, the whole cabinet. You have a one-to-one session with them. They all come and congratulate you. Have group pictures with them, photographs. So it's very
nice.
You
get more credibility to his work.
And coming from Tamil Nadu, it's good because it's a credit for Tamil Nadu. Get for a doctor, so for the profession, it is good. So it's not just for me, but for the work you do. From institutions, it's a very big thing. You know, because for all the people, almost 1,100 people work for me now. So for all of them, it's a recognition of the work, and I don't think it's for one person that you get it.
Yes.
It's for the work that you do. So that way it is always satisfying. But again, it is Swami, and without Swami, I don't think all these things can happen.
Well, I think from that time onwards, when Swami made you see that book where it is, I think he's been there.
That chap is a side devotee, so that is a link.
Yeah.
So if you say, how does Swami come into it? That chap is a side devotee, one of the few side devotees I knew in my life at that time, you know. And it's to him it has happened.
Yes.
So again, the link comes through Swami only.
Tune in to Sight. Spend the day with Sight.
from 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
I had a lot of fractures, I had a lot of bruises, and I had breathing problems, but it was Baba, Baba, Baba every day. With every breath, with every step I would take while running, it would be Om Shri Sai Ram.
Well, it actually all started with my mother getting a vision of Swami. This was in 1970, when she was cooking.
There were lots of roses and of course tiny little rosebuds, which was nowhere ready to bloom. And he just touched it with his finger.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a movie or a video,
mm-hmm.
right in front of my eyes, you know, this rosebud started to get bigger and bigger and bigger and opened out into a beautiful rose.
Love All, Serve All, we've made as famous as Swami has at the Hard Rock, because we put it on millions and millions of t-shirts, jackets, buttons, badges, everything. If you got your check, if you work for me at the top, Love All, Serve All, we put huge signs up in every restaurant around the world.
Dressed with Divinity is our weekly series in which we bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba from around the globe. You can listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai every Thursday at 9:50 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. To know more about the timings of this weekly series, Dressed with Divinity, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page of our website, radiosai.org, or you can also download and listen to any interview of your choice in this series at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/trist, that is radiosai.org/TRYST or trist. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, on 8th of May 2014. The time in the ashram right now is 26 minutes past 10 a.m. Indian Standard Time. You just heard part 2 of our Trist with Divinity interview with Dr. V. Mohan of Chennai. He was in conversation with Radio Sai's very own Mr. Bishu Prushti. You can catch the remaining two parts of this four-part interview right here on Morning Glory over the next two Thursdays. And in case you have missed part one, please download it at radiosai.org/trist, T-R-Y-S-T. This is an interview that holds so many lessons on spiritual topics like faith, surrender, power of prayers from a leading medical doctor of international repute. Now, those are my thoughts. What are yours? Your feedback, thoughts and comments on this conversation are most welcome on our email ID, listener@radiosai.org. Moving along, this past Tuesday, that is on 6th of May 2014, the world of Sai paid tribute to the chosen mother, Srimati Ishwaramba. Bhagwan has revealed that while we may exercise freedom of choice in picking our friends, our life partner, business associates, employees, employers, and so on, no human being has the prerogative to choose his or her mother, except, of course, the avatar. Before the divine descent, the Supreme Godhead carefully selects the right vehicle through which God is to be born in the human form. And Baba further pointed out that even an avatar needs a mother to fulfill his mission, for human birth is possible only through the medium of a mother. Such is the pedestal that Bhagwan places the mother on. Pretty wow, isn't it? Now, having just celebrated Ishwaramba Day, and many parts of the world are headed to Mother's Day on Sunday, May 11th, this revelation by Baba assumes greater significance as it holds important lessons for all of us. The avatar of the Kali age, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, chose to be born as Satyanarayana Raju through the divine self of Her Holiness, Mother Ishwaramba. She was a person of modest means with no formal education, and she lived a very humble and pious life in remote and rural setting during pre-independence India. Now, just try to wrap your head around the fact that the power that created the universe by a mere thought chose her to play the role of his mother for his Satyasai incarnation. In order to be born as a human being, even God needed a mother, and it must have been sometime, I'm guessing, February to March, more like February of 1926, that he chose to make his entry into her womb. He arrived 9 months later on November 23rd, 1926. We all know of that incident when the ball of blue light seemed to hit Mother Ishwaramba near the village well where she had gone to fill water. Decades later, Baba confirmed that incident and explained that his birth was indeed a pravesham, not a prasavam, meaning it was by means of an entry that he willed, not by conception. Just so you know, dear listeners, Bhagwan chose Her Holiness Mother Ishwaramba out of a total of 2.65 million people, as 2.65 was the population of India at that time. Of that number, at least about half, that is 1.3 million, would have been women, although we do not know how many of them were in their childbearing years at that time. Of course, the sacred land of Bharat has always been the chosen destination, the preferred destination of avatars. And out of the 1.3 million Indian women who lived under the British rule at that time, this sweet, innocent and pure-hearted young lady was chosen by God to play his mom during this avatarhood. What an honor and what a privilege. And for your information, at the time of the divine birth, these 2.65 million Indians lived under the rule of Emperor George V of Great Britain, and the Viceroy of India was the Lord of Irvine, who assumed office on 3rd April 1926. Another very interesting aside that I must mention here is that the very next day after Bhagwan's birth on November 23, 1926, the seer of Pondicherry, Sri Aurobindo Ghosh, came out of his intense and long penance and he declared that the Krishna consciousness has indeed descended successfully. The mission for which sages like himself had been praying hard had indeed been accomplished. Thus, on 24th November 1926, Sri Aurobindo retired, leaving the mother to run the Sri Aurobindo Ashram in Pondicherry. Baba was a day-old baby at that time, and he was already in control of his mission. Can you even imagine that? Of course, Her Holiness Mother Ishwaramba was blissfully unaware of the various divine forces at play, or should I say this cosmic conspiracy that was taking place around her, if I may use that term, and she stayed grounded and humble and went about performing her duties as a mother, a wife, a daughter-in-law with sincerity and hard work and under some very difficult circumstances. In a recent tribute to Her Holiness Mother Ishwaramba, Radio Sai spoke to two long-standing devotees of Baba who had observed her closely and they reflected on her persona. One of them, of course, is Mrs. Brij Ratanlal, the very revered Mrs. Brij Ratanlal, who has been a resident of Baba's ashram since the 1960s. Currently, she is 93 years young and very alert and awake. She was blessed to serve the Lord at close quarters, especially she looked after his kitchen all through her life. And much like her, another individual, Mr. B.V. Ramana Rao, too came to the lotus feet in the 60s and had the opportunity to be in Bhagwan's close proximity and serve him in various capacity all through his life. He again is 89 years young. Both these senior devotees describe the chosen mother, Her Holiness Mother Ishwaramba, as a living scripture on ideal womanhood. For she was tender at heart, according to both of them, modest and gentle in her mannerism, always restrained in her temper, and blessed with an inner wisdom and maturity, so much so that she eventually accepted her son's greater destiny was meant to be extended far beyond the boundaries of the family compound. Mr. Ramana Rao says, she was more or less the mouthpiece of so many troubled hearts. Those devotees in early years who could not get Baba's attention for some reason and were desperate to find a solution to their maladies would go to her. she would somehow present their pitiable condition to Baba, and even though Bhagwan would appear disinclined to take recommendations from her, he would always give her his ear. In those situations, Baba had to do tightrope walking because he never wanted the world to feel that the easiest way to get across to him is through the mother, or else she would become his secretary. At the same time, he did not ever want to displease her. So more often than not, he would bless everyone. The mother brought, but pretend as if he was doing it reluctantly. I've been a personal witness to many such incidents when the mother pleaded on a devotee's behalf and Swami in response said, "All right, ask them to sit here." And Mrs. Ratanlal recalls that Swami used to be very naughty with her. He loved playing pranks with her. So he would tease her and make some curious remarks, and she too, sensing her son's mood, would smartly retort. And as this went on, at some point, she would be no match for Swami's quick-witted comments, and so seemingly disappointed, she would return to her room in the mandir. As she climbed down the stairs, she would be repeatedly saying, "He is now a pedda devadu," meaning a big god. "Still, he is my son too." That is how, dear sisters and brothers, the mother of the avatar became mother to all humanity. In honor of the recent Ishwaramba Day, Team Radio Sai salutes the chosen mother with pranams and love, and we seek her blessings to be effective instruments in the mission of her pedda devadu, or her big god, and her little son that Satyanarayan Raja became. As we head into Mother's Day on Sunday, Baba's love and respect for her all his life, even after her passing on, is a great example to seek inspiration from. With that, let me now tell you about the Fleeting Moments interview I have in store for you. Today on Morning Glory, I will play for you the final part of my two-part conversation, that is the Fleeting Moments interview with Swami student Anandpur College alumna, Mrs. Lata Ramesh of Bangalore. And in case you have missed part one that was played last week, you can always find part one of Lata Ramesh's interview at radiosai.org/sci-students. Sai students is one word. It ends with an S. Right now, I'm pleased to play part one of this conversation for you. Here it is, and please enjoy.
There was one more learning I had when I was in college. Once I remember all my classmates had gathered on the ground, and we were busy criticizing and complaining about the system, about teachers, about this and what this is not happening. And for almost the whole, 45 minutes to an hour, we kept criticizing and complaining. And towards the end of that time, one of my classmates, suddenly she came in the middle, she stood in the middle and she said, "Girls, what are we doing? We are criticizing, and do you think that Swami is not here? Swami is not listening?" And immediately it struck me that what she's saying is so true. And while we may have a lot of reasons for us thinking that, yeah, we have the right to complain and criticize, but Swami doesn't like it. And that is the truth. And so we immediately dispersed. And this learning I carried with me, ever since then. And now I think twice before criticizing or complaining. And this is a valuable lesson. And I mean, my whole Anandpur days were filled with so many. It was not just about experiencing Swami, feeling Swami's presence. It was this inner transformation which had got activated.
And, education, the degree was incidental. In my case too, I have no idea when I studied and got my degrees. I have no clue. But tell me one thing, when you say that you learned to not criticize and not to complain, what do you do now when you're unhappy with the situation and you don't see it being perfect? If you find a situation which is disturbing and not the way you think it should be, how do you process that? How do you deal with it? You may not articulate your complaint or your criticism, but are you not processing it internally without speaking it out in your mind?
Yeah. I got a solution to this also when I was in Anandpur. In one of the discourses, Swami said that he told us to welcome problems. And at that moment of time, I kept introspecting about it and thinking that why is Swami saying welcome problems? Even we can say accept problems, we can say tolerate problems, or we can say deal with them.
Yeah.
Why did he say welcome? And for many years, I would keep thinking about it. Till finally one day it just came automatically, because problems are blessings. That is what Swami is trying to say. And when we welcome problems, we are able to see the blessing hidden within the problem. But as long as we are just accepting or tolerating problems, we are just fighting with it. But then the moment we start welcoming them, and we realize that this is, like Swami says, everything is for the good. He says, in Balvikas, we teach the children, see only the good, see only the good. And there is goodness in every situation, in every problem. And I'm not saying I've been able to practice it a lot, but I just try and be aware of it every time I have a stressful situation. And I keep telling myself that this is Swami's blessing. And if this is a blessing, let me become like a detective and try and unearth what is the goodness hidden underneath. And invariably, most of the time, like for example, when I had my back surgery, and I could not see Swami on close quarters, and many a time I was not able to, you know, sit on the floor and touch Swami's feet like many of my alumni friends, I would feel quite bad. And then I kept thinking that one Shivaratri, when Swami was taking out the linga, I was there in 1999 or 1998, I'm not sure. And from far, I was sitting in the bench, gave us permission to stand up on the bench, all the old ladies and me. And we all stood there and we could see Swami so clearly.
And you're so tall, that would have really helped.
Yes.
The tallest old lady.
yeah, and things like that. And I could see, and moreover, after this back episode, it becomes easier for me to relate to Swami's omnipresence. And to not worry so much about Swami's physical form. I think that was one of the blessings that I got from it. So
let's talk more about your practice of His presence or omnipresence in your life.
It started way back in my school days. And I had to go to school alone. I must have been in my third or fourth standard in Mumbai. And I had to cross a lot of places where there were some wine shops and places where there were a lot of hooligans or gundas just standing and smoking in the road and all that. And it used to trouble me and disturb me. And I looked much above my age at that time. And then, I don't know how it started, but I started imagining that I'm holding Swami's hand. I used to clasp my hand like this and walk. All I needed to do, just clasp my hand like this, and I would feel that Swami is there with me. And then I would chant the Gayatri Mantra, and keep chanting Gayatri Mantra. My mother kept telling me, that's the most powerful security, it's like a bulletproof armor.
It is.
It is, and you'll be completely protected, and I would just do that. And slowly over the days, and it just made me fearless. And every time there was fear, there was some kind of anxiety, I would just clasp my hand, and I would visualize Swami there.
It's a very nice practice.
Yeah, and then when I was in my sixth grade, again it was a beautiful personal experience where I consciously prayed to Swami and He answered my prayer. So I had done very badly in my math exam. And I did so miserably that I despaired of even getting 4 or 5 marks. And I think the minimum passing was some 13. And I came back, when I was walking back home, I was all crying and I was praying to Swami. And I stopped by at a nearby temple. Any temple I go into, I keep praying only to Swami. So I prayed to Swami. I said, Swami, I know I've not studied well and I've done miserably, but I've never failed in any subject so far. And my parents would be terribly disappointed if I did failed here. So please ensure that I pass. And I promise you that henceforward, I will put more effort in my studies. And this was a pact between. And I came back home. I told my mother. She said, don't worry, Swami will take care. And when the results were announced, I got 14 marks.
Ooh.
And to this day, I don't know, because most of my questions were unanswered. I don't know how I got those.
He even gave you a bonus mark.
Eh? Yes, yes.
13 plus 1.
Yes, he did. And then I remember in 1983, we came as a big Balvikas group to Puttaparthi. There was a India-wide Balvikas rally in 1983. And we were a huge group who had come from Mumbai and Maharashtra. And all the children, parents, gurus were made to stay in. Huge tents were erected for that. That day evening, there was a big storm and a lot of winds. And it started raining. There was a power cut. And the tent started moving, swaying. And the wooden pole, which was holding the tent upright, that all started moving, you know. And we were scared. We were right inside the tent that the tent would fall on top of our heads. But our Balvikas gurus were very encouraging and very positive. They made us all stand in groups of 10 and each of us hold one pole and start chanting Om Shri Sai Ram. So for 45 minutes to an hour in the darkness, all of us just held on to that pole and kept chanting Om Shri Sai Ram, Om Shri Sai Ram. I'm sure so many of my Balvikas friends who were there.
And there was a major cyclone in coastal India when this episode happened.
Yes.
So the gusty winds were an outcome of that cyclone.
Yes, yes. And then, of course, after that, we were shifted to more concrete sheds and all that. But the next day, Swami, in the discourse, he praised us a lot and he said that these are my Balvikas children and they have so much of faith and so much of devotion. And I felt very happy, and that was something that I try and pass on to my children and tell them that don't undermine the importance of the simple words Om Shri Sai Ram and the Gayatri Mantra, and have the faith and devotion that Swami will steer clear of any troubles at all times. Didi, there's one more incident. All this time my faith and devotion to Swami had been steadily increasing. But there was one marked incident in my life when he completely captured my heart. And that was in my ninth grade. I was a teenager, 14 years old, and I had accompanied my mother. She had come for Sivadal duty from Maharashtra. And I just accompanied her. It was my summer holidays and we had come for darshan. And you know, in those days in the sands, we used to run to get the first token line, you know, whatever. We used to be so excited about it. And I would write Om Shri Sai Ram in the book and all that. And one of the days, I was sitting the third row from the front, and Swami came near the person sitting in the front, and he created Vibhuti. And instinctively, I knelt and offered my kerchief to Swami. And there were many others who were sitting right in the front, the second row, who also offered kerchiefs. But what Swami did was, he looked at me intensely into my eyes, and he bent down and took my kerchief, wiped his hand, and threw it back to me. And he continued his darshan. It was only when he started moving, I realized that the kerchief that I had offered Swami was not a new one. It was the used one which I had been using the whole day. And I realized that Swami chose to bless my kerchief, where there were so many, another 5 or 6 kerchiefs offered to him right from the front. And that was when I was so touched by his unconditional love for this simple, ordinary teenager. He just took over my life.
Mm. Such a tender moment, isn't it?
Yes.
You have to treasure it forever.
Yes. Mm.
So, Lata, today you are a mother of 2 teenagers and you're a very busy, multitasking woman. You do so many things. You're involved in the samiti work. How do you practice his presence and how do you navigate through so many different challenges in your life? There's a lot of constraint on your time that I'm aware of because you have constantly deadlines to meet, and I do realize that when we work for our Sai centers, it's like a full-time job.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
How do you juggle it all?
I think chanting Swami's name, chanting the Gayatri Mantra, and like I said, he had prepared me in Anantapur with that duty consciousness, and I had always been aware of the importance of holding on to him within. And as I practiced that, I think it became a little easier for me to manage. There were a lot of challenges. Like I remember when I graduated from Anantapur, I joined my postgraduate in Mumbai. I was the only girl wearing sari to college in Mumbai. And my classmates would look down upon me and say, this girl has come from some village in Andhra Pradesh, and, you know. And the first time the tests happened in my class, the professor just handed over the question papers and he just walked out of the class. And my classmates also started, you know, opening their books and just copying. And then I asked him, what is happening? He said, this is common. This is, it is a given. But I told myself, this is not what I would want to do. And I went and sat alone in a bench and sat without copying myself or, you know, letting somebody else copy from me. And slowly I started earning respect because of that. And I realized that when we practice values, of course, we don't need to do that because we will earn respect, but it automatically comes to us. Swami does all the work and he lets us take all the credit. And many instances, like I remember when I was listening to Radio Sai some time back and you had an episode about the Gayatri Mantra. I recollected some beautiful experiences of my own. When I was a teenager, I was studying my 12th grade. My mother asked me to take tuitions in the slums. And I would finish college at 6 o'clock in the evening and then go to the slum directly from there. I would be all tired. And the entry point to the slum, there was a narrow alley and it was quite dark and a lot of antisocial elements sitting there. And I would just chant the Gayatri Mantra. And for a whole year, while coming back, it would be 8:30 in the night. The whole year, I would just hold on to the Gayatri Mantra, chanting it while going in, while coming in. I was completely fearless. It was not that anything didn't happen to me. It just made me so fearless.
It gives you that confidence. As you said, it's like a bulletproof vest you're wearing.
Yeah.
It's invisible to the outer world.
Yeah.
And when you know that you're wearing a bulletproof vest, you're not going to be worried about somebody shooting at you.
Yes, yes.
It gives you a very strong inner confidence.
Yeah, yeah. And last year, I had a major fall in Bangalore. I hurt my lips and I needed more than 25 sutures on my lips.
Oh.
They just rushed me to the nearest hospital. And while those doctors were putting the sutures, I was awake and aware. Though they had given me a local anesthesia, I could still feel a little bit of pain. But the constant chanting of Gayatri Mantra for the whole hour while they were doing the sutures not only helped me not feel the pain, not feel anxiety and be fearless at that point of time, it also helped the doctors, I realized later, to do the stitching in such perfect order. Now, whenever whichever doctor I show to, they say they have done such a beautiful job. And it was a very small hospital, very ordinary doctors there. I mean, it is...
Because Gayatri impacts the entire environment around you, not only you, but everybody else around you.
Yes.
So I think your chanting guided the doctors in their work also.
Yes, yes. And I've taught this Gayatri right from the beginning to my children too. And when they had to be taken for vaccinations, and we made them chant, and even now it's very comical sometimes when the needle goes in, they start, they keep going on, and they themselves say when we chant, we feel less pain.
Yes.
It's really amazing, yeah. There's one more incident, Didi, I would like to share. This is when my daughter was born. I was 5 months pregnant with her, and I wanted a girl. And one day when I was doing my prayers, I was praying to Swami about it and I could hear Swami's voice very clearly saying that it will be a girl. And then he told me, you name her Ananta. And he explained the meaning. He said, Ananta means one who lives forever. And then after my prayers, when I opened my eyes, I thought maybe it's just my mind playing tricks. And, you know, sometimes you imagine, over-imagine and you're wishing so badly to have a girl and maybe that is why it's all happening. But the moment I opened my eyes, there was a nectar amritam flowing from Swami's photo. Just at that moment, it was just still wet and flowing. And then I realized that this is Swami and this is what he wanted me to name her. But then I was thinking what kind of name it is. I would have gone for a more fancier name. And finally when she was born, the whole mystery, opened up. She was a 6-day-old baby when she was diagnosed with a condition called septicemia. It's an infection of the blood. And it became very serious. She had to be hospitalized and all kind of tubes were inserted into the small baby right in her veins and her nose and mouth. And it was very painful. And she was right inside the ward and the doctors were working on her and I was crying outside, sitting in the whole day, you know, that's what was happening. And 2 days, 3 days, the doctors tried putting in antibiotics into her and they even gave her a blood transfusion, but she was not responding to any of those medicines and slowly her condition was deteriorating. And then the third day, my mother, who was also there with me, she said, enough is enough. Now we will not just keep quiet. Swami, you have to help this girl. You have to help this baby. And she literally, you know, told Swami, you have to do it. And she took a lot of vibhuti and started massaging this baby. And the nurses who were there, they said, don't be careful, all the tubes are there. She said, no, I'm just going to do that. And she spent the next half an hour massaging the baby with vibhuti and chanting Gayatri Mantra and saying Om Shri Sairam. And within 2 hours, she started responding to the medicines. And when the doctors came for the evening rounds, there was a smile on their face and they realized that this girl is becoming better. And within the next 2 days, she was discharged and she never had any of those symptoms and any of those problems again. And it was then I realized, like we have so many different interpretations of the meaning of the word Ananta. But Swami said, one who lives forever, meaning that I will make her live. I will take care of her. I will give her a new life.
Hmm.
And that was what he did.
And you have a beautiful daughter named Ananta.
Yes, she's studying here in Swami's school.
Wonderful. Lata, you have extensive experience as a Bal Vikas Guru. You've taught all groups at all levels. How did you experience Swami's presence there? And how did you bring what you've learned at His lotus feet into that experience as a Guru?
Being a Bal Vikas Guru was a beautiful learning experience for me. Initially, I started thinking that I have so many things to share for the children and children are going to learn. But then over the years, I've realized that it is me as a Guru who's doing the learning. We are learning constantly as we are teaching. So one beautiful experience I would like to share there. Just a couple of years back, I was taking the third group Balvikas, Prisivadal, that's what it's called in India. We were teaching Bhagavad Gita shlokas to the children. And I was preparing for a particular shloka. It goes like, Uddhare dat manatmanam, natmanam avasadayet, atmeva yatmano bandhur, atmeva ripuratmanah. And the meaning of the shloka is that man can elevate himself on his own. He can push himself down on his own. And he is his own friend and he is his own enemy. And while I was preparing for the shloka that day, something had happened and I was very upset and very depressed myself. But, you know, being the duty conscious that I have become, I decided I have to go for this class and take this class. But while I was preparing for the shloka, I came across a beautiful story. And it was a very beautiful, touching story. Story goes like this, that there is an old woman who lost her husband and her son in a series of tragic accidents. And she became very, very depressed after that. And so depressed that she literally house arrested herself. And she wouldn't go out anywhere. She would hardly eat. And for many months, she was in a state of that depression. Till one day, one of the windows of her room was open. And a bird, which was slightly injured, had hopped into the room. And seeing the bird, her natural maternal instinct arose and she wanted to help the bird take out the thorn or whatever it was. It was, its feet was injured. But this bird, what it did, it went under the cot. And when it went under the cot, she kept trying to, you know, bend down and search for it. And it was very dark under the cot and she could hardly see it. And then she just spoke to the bird very sweetly. She said, "What are you doing there underneath, hidden in the darkness? How can I help you if you don't come out?" These were the words that she spoke to the bird. But when she spoke to the bird, she realized that this was her higher consciousness speaking to her. And it is the same thing for her. As long as she locks herself in the house and refuses to come out, and refuses to make an attempt to come out of the depression, how can God help her? And so she started, you know, becoming better. And I was preparing this story for this shloka and I realized that as I was preparing and as I was reading that story, my depression lifted. My mood became elevated. And I started sharing the story with the children in the class and I felt so happy after that. And I realized it is in our hands. We have the choice to be happy or to be sad. We have the choice to raise ourselves up or put ourselves down.
And we have the choice to be our best friend or our worst enemy.
Yes.
And I've always found that teaching children actually benefits me the most.
Yes.
Because you can't tell children anything till you believe in it.
Absolutely.
And you can be the best, most eloquent teacher. It won't have the same impact unless you mean the words you utter.
Absolutely.
So Balvikas serves the guru more than the children.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's why sometimes, even if there are one or two children in the class, I still want to continue the class, I still want to take the class, because finally it's me who's benefiting, and I don't want to miss that benefit.
And who knows that one child in your class could be a future Vivekananda or a Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.
Yeah.
So you can't take that chance. You can't leave one child behind also.
Yes, yes. And as I kept teaching the children, I realized like we would tell them about Swami's sayings, help ever, hurt never, love all, serve all, start early, drive slowly, read safely, be good, do good, see good. This is the way to God. And all those simple words. Swami's words are so simple and so profound. And then I realized that Swami is not just this form. He's his words. He's in the countless discourses that he has spoken. He is the act of selfless service that he has been doing all his life and it's still happening today. He is in that love which is in that innocent children who are fondly looking up to me and saying, "Yes, Aunty, Sai Ram Aunty." He is there in each one of us and that was the blessing that I got from Balvikas. And I always tell my children, Swami is there, still there, even now, in each one of us.
Lata, today the reality is quite altered. The Mahasamadhi has happened. Why is Bhagwan's presence still so important in your life? And how do you go about
continuing to practice His presence in everything that you do. When I was a school-going child, I used to proudly go and ask my classmates, "Have you seen God? Have you seen God?" You know, and they would say, "Yeah, every Sunday we see. Every day we go to the temple, we see God." I said, "No, not that God in the temple, in the statue, but the real living God who walks around us and who speaks to us and whom we can touch." They said, "No. Who can see that?" I said, no, I have seen, and very proudly I used to. And that is a feeling I still carry with me even today. I mean, just the fact that we have been there at the time of the avatar and we have seen His living presence and we are continuing to experience His omnipresence is the greatest gift. And I always tell my mother that this is the greatest gift of inheritance that my parents have given us. This gift of introducing us to Swami, of showing us what God is. And I try to do the same thing for my children. And finally, if they hold on to Swami and Swami continues in their lives or not, that is left between Swami and them. But as a mother, as a parent, it is my job to introduce them to Swami, because it is the most valuable gift. It's the most valuable blessing. Don't we go around telling people when there's a 50% discount sale in Shoppers Stop or Lifestyle, and we go about telling, you know, and we got such beautiful things. But then this is the most priceless blessing that we have. Why are we keeping quiet about it? And why are we hesitating to introduce our children to it and ensuring that they are able to feel Swami's love and holding on to Swami's support at all points of time? That's the greatest gift. I mean, there is no sense in leaving them wealth and possessions and other things. More important to leave them this gift.
And I think it's also the best insurance policy we can buy for our children.
Yes.
Insurance against calamities, disasters, disappointments, heartbreaks,
yes.
So-called failure in life.
Yes.
So that they have something so solid to fall back upon. And as a parent, I think that's the most valuable gift one can give the children.
Yes, yes. That is the most valuable thing. And I remember Jemma ma'am used to tell us when we were in college, especially when we were leaving Anantapur, she said that, "Don't worry that you're leaving Anantapur and Prashanthi Nilayam. You can carry Prashanthi Nilayam wherever you go. Carry it with you." And I would wonder, what does she mean by carrying it? But as a mother, later on I realized that it is up to us whether we are able to create that environment of Prashanthi Nilayam in our homes, in our workplace, in our surroundings, and around ourselves. It is up to us, and we can do that. And I try to do that. You know, we go for Veda classes, we go for bhajans, my children go for Balvikas. And slowly, and we listen to Radio Sai every day morning live.
Very good practice, may I say. Very good for the health of the whole family.
No, just listening to the Om and the Rudram chanting, it immediately elevates whatever mood we are in.
And the house feels like Prashanti. There are many times I listen to the live from Mandir at home, especially when I'm off,
yes,
away from work these days most,
yes,
of the time.
Yes.
The moment I switch on and the Omkar comes on, I'm just transported to Sai Kulwant Hall, and that's also what most of our listeners report back to us.
Yes, yes.
What a blessing Swami has given,
yes,
us in the form of Radio,
yes,
Sai, really.
Yes, yes. It is, I must really thank you guys so much, yeah.
No, we must all thank Swami for it.
Yes,
it's,
yes,
His grace and Professor Venkatraman's hard work that such a thing has come to fruition, that people have access to daily live from the Mandir twice a day.
Yes, yes, it is, it is. And one more thing that I feel it's important to do when we are practicing Swami's presence in our lives is to stay being positive. And in this world where there's so much of negativity all around, and while practicing Swami's teachings or doing Swami's work or doing our own personal sadhana, we have to really work extra hard at being positive at all times. And the times when I am not positive, I am very negative, I really miss the lesson that is hidden within a circumstance or a problem or within people, you know, difficult people, whatever. There's difficulties all around us, negativity all around us, and hidden under those storm clouds is those beautiful rainbows. And we miss all that if we are not positive. And I feel it's really very important. We have to work at it. It's not easy, but it needs to be done.
So Lata, clearly your life is saturated by Swami and His teachings. If I simply asked you a question, who is Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba for you, what would you say?
When Swami corrects and guides me, He is my guru and guide. When He nurtures, nourishes, admonishes and disciplines, He is my divine mother and father. When He teaches me, He molds me. When He transforms me, He is my divine teacher. When He supports, He motivates, and He encourages and lends a shoulder to rest on, He is my divine friend. When He energizes and He heals me, He's a divine physician and healer. And at all times, He's my God, someone who loves me absolutely, unconditionally. He's my life, my reason for existence.
Very beautifully said. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much
Great
for helping
me
relive and recount all those beautiful blessings that I've experienced in my life.
And I'm sure our listeners will enjoy listening to it as well and find a lot of answers and a great deal of inspiration. Thank you very much, Lata.
Thank you so much.
Sairam.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live on May the 8th, 2014. The time in Prashanthi Nilayam, India right now is 4 minutes past 11 a.m. You just heard the final part of my two-part conversation with Sai University alumna, Mrs. Lata Ramesh. In case you have missed part 1 of that that was played last week, you can find it at radiosci.org/Sai Students. By the way, all Radio Sai interviews can be downloaded for free, whether it is our Fleeting Moment series with Baba students or our Tryst with Divinity interviews with devotees of Baba from around the world. And as always, your feedback, thoughts and comments mean the world to us. So please go ahead and email us at listener@radiosci.org. Now I want to leave you with something to reflect upon, and this is from the highly respected Indian, Mr. Ratan Naval Tata, the chairman emeritus of the Tata Group. He was recently in the news as he became the first Indian since independence to receive the Knight Grand Cross of the Order of the British Empire, GBE, one of the highest civilian honors of the UK. I thought you might enjoy his words of wisdom. Mr. Tata says, and I quote him, "Ups and downs in life are very important to keep us going, because a straight line, even in an ECG, means we are not alive." He further says, "None can destroy iron but its own rust. Likewise, none can destroy a person but his or her own mindset." Those words from Mr. Ratan Tata. By the way, just so you know, Mr. Ratan Tata has met with Bhagwan Baba several times and was quite instrumental in getting the Sri Satya Sai Vidya Vahini project off the ground. With that, it's time for me to bid you Sairam. But today, I thought I should instead say Namaste to you, as I just learned its beautiful meaning. Namaste is a Sanskrit word that means, "My soul recognizes your soul. I honor the light, love, beauty, truth and kindness within you, because it is also within me." In sharing these things, there is no difference or distance between us. We are the same, we are one. Therefore, Namaste to all of you. Jai Sai Ram.
Take my love.